Blog Talk Radio.
Lincoln 103, 5 Lincoln 102.
Responding to 401 parking circuit, section 1 boy.
Henry 8, Henry 9, respond to gate 437, Bravo, for your dignitary detail. 3K911, unattended 400, lower level, near carousel 4, black bag. GTA in progress, 401 parking structure, section 4 boy.
Responding to 401 parking structure.
Of the new Public Safety Radio. Wow, it's been a while since we've been here with you, and we're certainly glad to have another opportunity of coming together here on the new Public Safety Radio format. A lot of things have happened since we last spoke. Since the last time we got together, it's been a couple of months, actually. We have not forgotten you, and we've been extremely busy, and we're extremely excited to bring you the news of so many new things happening at Private Officer International and Armor College. We want to start off first by letting you know that there has been a name change to our radio format. As you may have heard, had you been paying attention, and hopefully you were, we have changed the name from the Private Officer Radio to the Public Safety Radio, and that's because, well, we've invited some friends and colleagues and other professionals from other aspects and areas of the public safety industry to join us here on the Public Safety Radio. And so we'll have other radio shows being featured that may be involving EMS, Emergency Medical Services, or Fire Service, College, Public Safety, Loss Prevention, Law Enforcement. We hope to have a number of them to come aboard with us, and other areas of private security. And so there'll be other radio host that will be gathering here over the next few months as we grow this new platform, the Public Safety Radio, to be all-encompassing of both private security and public safety, because really private security is public safety for the most part. I mean, you know, things have changed a great deal over the last 20, 30, 40, 50 years, as we often say, and so the guard of 40 years ago is just about gone. Yes, most security officers do still observe and report, as do law enforcement officers, but they're all so very well involved and oftentimes, you know, more of their duties mirror that of law enforcement. And so most, you know, quote, guards, unquote, are basically being phased out as more security become more proactive, more involved. And so we have really reformatted our radio platform to be all-encompassing of not only the private security and public safety industries, but we want to make sure that we really engage all of our listeners and all of our partners, which includes, of course, the EMS Fire Service and many other aspects of public safety. We also have a couple of brand new shows that we ourselves have started, and you may have already tuned in. We have a program that will be brought to you two Sundays a month called On the Legal Side, and that really will encompass the legal aspects of certain events or incidents that have occurred. We will analyze, we will pick things apart, and we will look at why things were wrong or why things went right, and what the legal aspect of the event or situation really is. We'll have guests, including attorneys and law enforcement. We'll bring in others who are highly qualified in their specific area to discuss the legal aspects of a case. And we'll also bring in victims and even those involved in the case from time to time. We're really looking forward to all the new cool things that we're adding to Private Officer International, as well as our growth, rapid growth, actually, in Armor College. Just so much happening. It's unbelievable. We're going to kick off today's show on the legal side, looking at a couple of cases. And on Monday's program, tomorrow, we're going to look at some of the services and some of the new things happening here at Private Officer International. So I don't want to give that away. But I just wanted to give you a heads up and let you know that, number one, our radio platform has definitely changed. It's been revamped. We have really begun to look at the public safety industry and how they really intertwine with private security. And number two, we really wanted to give you a heads up as well about all the exciting things happening, and be sure to tune in tomorrow night here on the new Public Safety Radio so that you'll get not only informed, but that you'll be excited like we are and that you'll get involved even more than you might already be. We've had a fantastic, I will go into this a bit, but we'll tell you more about this tomorrow, actually. But we've had a really exciting couple of months here at our offices. We've had a really exciting, let me back up for those of you who think we were just goofing off someplace in Florida where the sun is shining and the weather is beautiful, maybe playing a little golf. I know some of you thought we were just laying low, maybe things were dying out here at POI, or maybe we just gave up on the radio show and, this and that. Let me tell you, my friends, that is the furthest from the truth. We have been slammed, I'm talking about from one day after the other, from way before the sun comes up until way after the sun goes down. Our offices are humming. We have got a lot of things happening. So don't fear. We're still here, and we're going strong. I just want to let you know we haven't been goofing off. We haven't gone to a retreat. We haven't gone to R&R. We haven't taken a sabbatical. No. A friend of mine once told me, I only sleep a few hours a night because I figure eventually, there'll be another time for that. Whether I'm alive or not, I'll have all the time then to sleep. I need to make hay while the sun's shining. Many people really do believe that if you waste your time sleeping, if you waste your time doing nothing, then you really lose focus, you lose momentum, you lose sight on your business, your career, your family, and I found that to be true. And so I can tell you that in the last 11 years since we've started POI, we have really just continued the momentum. And every year, as you know, if you're a member, if you're a follower, every year you see that more and more and more great things are happening. And we always come up with new and exciting projects, programs, benefits, rewards, training. And that's what makes a business continue to grow exponentially, because if you don't do those things, you become stagnant, you become stale, you become just yesterday's old news. And it doesn't take a whole long, lot of time, doesn't take long at all, actually, for people to lose interest, for people to go away. So we try to keep it fresh, and we try to keep you informed, involved, and part of it, because you are part of the family. You're part of the family here at Private Officer International. All right, well, tomorrow night, don't miss the radio show, because we're going to be talking about everything that we've been up to over the last 2 months, almost 10 weeks, actually. We're going to be talking about everything exciting coming up, including a resort retreat that you will not want to miss. That's right. We're going to take you to a resort in the mountains of Virginia on a beautiful lake during the beautiful spring weather, 3-day, all-inclusive. I'm really getting ahead of myself now. I'm telling you everything I want to tell you tomorrow. But you're not going to want to miss that information tomorrow on tomorrow's program here on the Public Safety Radio. We're still going to, by the way, I just want to let you know, we are still going to call our radio show here at Monday nights the Private Officer Beat, but it will be on the new public radio platform. All right, well, today we're going to look at three different cases, three different legal issues that have come up over the last few months or close to a year, and a case that happened a while back. And we're going to look at why they turned out the way that they did and what could have been done differently. What might have the people involved just change just a little bit to prevent the outcome? So let's talk about the first incident, the first case. This recently happened within the last year or so in Virginia Beach. A security officer assigned to a nightclub got involved in some type of confrontation in the parking lot of the business. It may have started inside, I'm not too sure, but I know that it eventually wound up in the parking lot of the nightclub in Virginia Beach. During this incident, several people and the security officer was involved in a verbal confrontation. I don't believe it ever got physical at that point. There was some words exchanged. The persons were asked or told to leave the property. There was some more words exchanged. It got very heated. I know that at some point, the security officer involved, who was armed, forcefully, verbally told the subjects to get off the property. And after a few moments of going back and forth, they did. The people that were being trespassed, ejected, evicted off the property, eventually, within a few moments, we don't know exactly how many, I don't think the police report stated how many, but they did eventually get in their vehicle and they drove off. And that would have been all well and good. That would have been exactly what we had hoped for. That would have been the most best outcome to this whole incident. Unfortunately, for everyone involved, they did not leave the area. They left the premises, but they maintained their presence in the area by going to a convenience store, a gas station, a couple of spots over. It wasn't down the road. It wasn't around the corner. It wasn't across the street, but it was a couple of businesses over. So there was a nightclub, another business, and then the convenience store. And somewhere along the way, after they pulled in there, they continued a verbal confrontation across the business lots with the security officer, who obviously still, you know, upset, still agitated about the situation, conversed back and forth, eventually walked from his business several businesses over to where these people were at the convenience store, and at some point, a weapon was shown from one of the persons in the vehicle who was involved, and shots were fired. The security officer from the nightclub, who had walked over several businesses to reach where those subjects were now in the convenience store parking lot, got involved. Weapon from these subjects was shown, and the security officer shot one of the people. The man shot was armed. He died. Subsequently, law enforcement investigated the situation. And through their investigation and their interviews, and I believe they even had some surveillance from businesses nearby, possibly even the nightclub, and I know that the convenience store had some surveillance. And through their investigation, they presented the case to the grand jury. What is a grand jury? Maybe you're not even aware to what a grand jury does or what they are, who they are. And very quickly, a grand jury is a group of jurors selected from a pool of jurors who look at cases, look at the evidence, look at the statements from the officers, look at what might be presented in a relatively quick time. We're talking about, you know, under an hour, maybe an hour. And their sole purpose, their sole duty is to determine probable cause for the arrest to proceed to trial, or if the person has not been arrested or charged yet, their sole purpose is to determine if there's probable cause to make the arrest. So in this case, the security officer was indicted by the grand jury. He did go to trial. And it was a relatively long trial. A lot of people were involved. A lot of people testified. There was a lot of evidence presented. And it was the Commonwealth of Virginia's position that had the security officer stayed on his property, the man he shot would not have been dead. So let's look at this as the Commonwealth of Virginia looked at it. While the security officer was on the property that he was guarding, on the property that he was securing, he had every right in the world to defend himself and others. The law allows us as individuals, private citizens, or law enforcement alike, to use deadly force when we're in imminent danger to protect ourselves or others. And while he was on the business property where he was employed, had the person or persons being ejected pulled a firearm, he could have reasonably and legally used deadly force to protect himself. But it was the position of the Commonwealth of Virginia, the prosecutor's office, in this case, to subject the information. Their key point was he left the safety and security of his property and walked over several other businesses to engage in confrontation once more with the persons in the vehicle. And even though one of the occupants had a deadly weapon, and even though he may have even pointed it at the security officer, it was the position of the prosecutor's office that he subjected himself to that deadly situation. He subjected himself and probably even escalated that situation by walking over across several businesses into the convenience store parking lot to continue that confrontation. Had he not done that, had he stayed in the parking lot of his business, had he gone inside and protected the patrons and employees of that business, which was his job, which was his duty, the confrontation and the shooting and the death would not have happened. One might reasonably argue everyone has a right to protect themselves, and you would be absolutely correct. But looking at the position of the state, looking at the prosecutor's office, looking at the totality of the situation, you have to understand that had the security officer not left his property, had he not left, his employment, his employer, the location where he was employed to protect, had he gone inside, called police, and removed himself from the situation? Because you see, at that point, he was no longer in imminent danger. Once that vehicle left, once those persons left the property and drove a couple of businesses over, they removed themselves, and the danger aspect was over. Well, you might say they could still shoot from where they were at. That's true. They could still shoot from where they're at. But had he walked inside of the business, locked the door, called 911, and stayed to protect the customers instead of injecting himself back into a confrontational situation, the shooting would never have happened. The person would never have been dead. The security officer would never have had to use that level of force. In fact, he would never have used any level of force because at that point, the confrontation was over. Imminent danger was well over. But it was the position, probably rightfully so, looking at every aspect of the case, the security officer escalated the situation by walking over to the business where he had no right to be, no authority to be, was not his place to be there, and continued the confrontation, and at that point was put in a position where he had to defend himself because the person was armed and evidently had threatened him with a gun. The result of this case was that the security officer was found guilty, and he has been sentenced to prison, and he is currently in prison for the shooting death that occurred on a property where he had no right to be. From the legal side, we have to look at four things. Are you truly in imminent danger? Imminent danger, remember, is only when you are face to face and have no option to get out of that situation safely. When you are protecting yourself or another from a reasonably deadly incident or a situation where you could be severely injured. If you have another choice, if you have an opportunity to stand down and get yourself safe, then deadly force probably would not be the right level of force for that situation. But in this case, he didn't take that option. He didn't secure himself into a location where he would be safe. He left the property and continued the confrontation that eventually escalated to deadly force. In this next case, we're going to look at, from the legal point, the legal aspect, is a case that happened during the 2014 Christmas season when a shopkeeper in Kansas confronted a shoplifter in their store. The shoplifter, who stole several items, pushed away the clerk or the store manager. There was a little bit of physical violence. I guess you could classify that as violence. The shopkeeper then ran behind the counter, got his firearm, chased the man into the parking lot, and fired multiple rounds, killing the shoplifter. Again, in this situation, law enforcement interviewed several people, looked at surveillance, conducted their investigation, did whatever it is they did, and came to the same conclusion that this was a situation where the person had used an unreasonable force because it was not an imminent danger situation. Well, you might argue, and reasonably so, the man could have felt he was in danger for his life. But in this scenario, where the shopkeeper had been assaulted by a fist or a hand, and no weapon was involved, it's hard to argue at that point that you have a sense of fearing for your life. And in this situation, the shopkeeper was arrested for murder, second degree. Looking at it from the legal side, from the legal standpoint, why was the shopkeeper, why was the store clerk, the store manager, why was he prosecuted? Why is he guilty in this shooting death? It all comes back to that imminent danger situation. Whether private person or law enforcement, we only have the authority to use deadly force when we can not get away, when we are definitely in imminent danger, when there's no choice. It is our last choice to save ourselves or others from possible death or, you know, serious bodily harm, serious bodily injury. What should the shopkeeper have done? He'd been assaulted. Someone had tried to steal from him. He was trying to protect himself, protect his property, and maybe even detain the suspected shoplifter. Citizens all have a right to detain someone who's committed a crime in their presence. Many states have private or citizen's person's arrest. Was that the case here? Was that the situation? Looking at all the information, looking at how this incident played out, it is the position of the state that the shopkeeper was assaulted. That is not being argued. He was assaulted. But there was no reason to believe that he was in imminent danger. Again, as in the previous incident that we just discussed, the perpetrator had already fled the building. He'd already gone outside. If the shopkeeper was truly in fear for his life, he should have locked the door while dialing 911 and taken his firearm and stayed inside to protect himself in the building. Once he ran outside, imminent danger was no longer involved, even if it had been a true self-defense earlier on in the case. But once he went out after the suspect, after the person, he injected himself into a situation that escalated in death. As a private person, as a citizen, we have a right to defend ourselves. We have a right to detain someone who's committed a crime. We have a right to detain someone who's assaulted us. But we have to take the totality of the situation into consideration. We have to look at all of the facts, and unfortunately, the average American, the average citizen, the average person, probably any place in the country, in the world, doesn't have the knowledge, the legal knowledge, or the legal understanding of what threat assessment is, or what they're allowed to do, or how they should consider all things first before using any level of force. But a reasonable, prudent person should be able to rationalize, hey, this person has ran outside. I'm no longer in danger here in my business. Why would I want to inject myself back into a dangerous situation? Let me lock the door. Let me call the police. Let me get my firearm here inside and protect myself in case he breaks back in case he tries to do harm to me here inside the business. A reasonably prudent person could make that decision, could and should understand that by running back outside or running outside is putting himself in possible harm's way. Now, in this particular shoplifting event, once outside, no weapons was involved. Confrontation escalated, shots were fired by the store employee, shopkeeper, and unfortunately, there really wasn't any evidence to support his theory of self-defense. There was no evidence to support himself of imminent danger. There was no evidence to say, well, we can understand he wasn't fear of his life. As with the security officer at the nightclub, the safest place for the shopkeeper, the safest place for this person who had just been assaulted was inside the business. And he should have stayed there securely behind a locked door until police arrived. From the legal side, from the legal aspect of this shooting, a firearm was never introduced, a weapon was never in play during the commission of the crime inside the store. No one had any weapon except the store manager, shopkeeper himself. He introduced the weapon. Had it not been for his firearm, had it not been for him grabbing his gun and chasing the shoplifter outside, no one would have been shot and no one would have died that day. Yes, there would have been some property stolen. Yes, someone was assaulted. But it wasn't a serious assault. It wasn't a maiming injury. It wasn't something that someone could say they were in fear of their life to the point of being in imminent danger. And so the shopkeeper, the store employee himself, injected that weapon into the scenario. The store employee himself escalated the violence, escalated the force unreasonably, and as a result, there was a death in this situation. From the legal side, had he not left the building, had he not left the store, had he just called police and let them do their job, the person may or may not have been caught. He may or may not have escaped. But the bottom line is, he wouldn't be dead, and the store employee wouldn't have gone to prison. Cases of use of force are not cut and dry. There is no template for what to do in these various situations. Oh, I know. I know that people want to quarterback, Monday morning quarterback. People want to sit back and backseat drive. I know people want to tell you, well, if he didn't done that. I know that even the experts on use of force look at these situations and tell themselves and everyone else who will listen, this guy was stupid. That should never have happened. And although they're probably right, although the circumstances didn't warrant the outcome, we have to remember, most people, even in private security, are not trained. During a use of force situation, 100% of the time, the adrenaline flowing, the physiology of the person, the physical aspect of the person, the mental aspect of the person, all of that is entwined. You have so many things happening. Time just speeds by. Seconds, they just go on by like just nobody's business. And things happen before you know it, and the situations occur. And there's no way to take it back. There's no way to pull the bullet back into the gun. There's no way to bring that person back to life that you've killed. We have to live with our circumstance, our situation, good or bad, that we may have made worse. That's why it's important that if you're in any type of security, law enforcement, public safety industry, if you're armed, if you're given the duty and responsibility of protecting, of detaining or arresting, then it's of the utmost importance that you get the proper training, not just once, but yearly. I'm not talking about just going to the firing range. I'm not talking about just qualifying every 2 years, every year. Yeah, I qualify. Yeah, I'm good to go. Use of force entails so many things more than the handgun. Be trained, certified in every area of use of force and understand about threat assessment and totality of the situation. And take the training over and over and over and really refresh your mind and your skills, because skills are perishable. It's important to go above and beyond what might be required of your employer or your state regulatory board or anybody else. I know people in the industry who go to the shooting range 6-7 times a year because they understand there might be a time when they might have to use that weapon to defend themselves, to protect themselves, to do, you know, help someone else. Same thing with baton, pepper spray, taser, and any other weapon that you might carry. All right, in our last case that we're going to look at, this happened a few years back. But it's another situation, another case, another incident where someone did not understand or think about or maybe misjudged imminent danger and what that really means. In this case, a security officer on foot patrol walking through at night, I think it was around 11 p.m. or so, walking through an apartment complex that was a HUD Section 8 type complex. Now, the security officer, was well known to be aggressive in his duties. That's to say that he was proactive, that he stopped a lot of people, he busted people with guns and drugs, he trespassed people, and he did the job that he was asked to do. It was a tough neighborhood, but it was under control. And one night, while he was out on foot patrol, about 11 p.m., a vehicle made entry into the complex. And as it drove through the complex, someone from the vehicle, and there was multiple occupants in the front seat and the back seat, someone fired upon the security officer. They shot several times. I don't know if it was more than a couple of times, but it was numerous times. It could have been five or six shots. It may have been a whole clip. I don't remember exactly. I know they shot at him. And he was an armed security officer. He was a non-sworn officer, so he had no arrest authority, but he was an armed security officer. He had been fired upon. Keep in mind that deadly force has now been used against the security officer. I mean, that's not arguable. No one could deny. No one could, you know, say otherwise. No one could stand up and go, well, that was deadly force being used against the security officer. We're not even going to try to, you know, say otherwise. And he did what any reasonable person, civilian or law enforcement, would have done. And that was to immediately draw his weapon, get behind some vehicles, and return fire. And he shot at the vehicle a number of times. And again, I don't remember if it was 15, if he emptied a clip, if he reloaded. I don't remember that. And that's not even an issue or an importance to this case, to the situation. But he did shoot back at the car that was shooting at him. Now, keep in mind that this car had multiple occupants. It was dark at night. He didn't know. He couldn't see for sure who was shooting at him. I'm sure that he could see the muzzle flash. I'm sure that he could see that, hey, there's a gun sticking out the window. But he probably wasn't able to identify with certainty who was shooting at him. Maybe they were all shooting at him. He didn't know. So he returned fire, and he shot back at the vehicle. And he was justified in doing so. The vehicle drove through the apartment complex. And it was a medium-sized complex. I'd say it probably had 150, 200 apartment units, multiple buildings, 25, 30 units, buildings. And the vehicle drove through the apartment complex, and the security officer followed it and kept down low and shot back a few more times. But the gunfire eventually subsided. The gunfire from the vehicle subsided as the vehicle quickly sped out of the complex. At that point, no more gunfire was coming from the vehicle. At that point, the vehicle was traveling on City Road, away from the complex. But the security officer ran through the complex and out onto the public road and shot one more time at the vehicle driving away. And unfortunately, because he chose to do this, he shot and killed a person in the back seat of that vehicle that was heading in the opposite direction of where he was. Again, in this situation, in this deadly force situation, law enforcement investigated. The security officer was indicted for murder in the first degree. It wasn't second degree. It wasn't manslaughter. It wasn't aggravated assault. It wasn't, oops, it's a mistake. It was murder in the first degree. And murder in the first degree in every state means that it was premeditated, that he had thought about it before committing it. If it was something that happened afterwards as a result, then it would have been murder in the second. But he thought about it. The car had already left the property, had already gotten onto public road, was already heading away from the security officer. And he had a time, he had seconds to think and continue to run onto the public road and chase the car and fire one last round, striking and killing an innocent person. Because it was determined later that the person in the back seat never had a gun. For all we know, he was just a passenger out for a ride or out to the going to the store with his friends. And when they chose, when someone in that vehicle chose to drive through the apartment complex and shoot at the security officer. So here you have a situation, again, where the security officer was in imminent danger. No argument. A vehicle had come in. Shots were fired. He feared for his life. He returned fire. Just what any reasonable person would do. I would do it. You would do it. We would all do it. We would all defend ourselves. It's a natural thing to do. But the problem in this case, as with the other two previous that we have discussed, there came a time during this shooting incident when the vehicle stopped firing while they were in the apartment complex. While they were still in the apartment complex, shots from the vehicle subsided. The security officer was no longer in imminent danger. The vehicle pulled out to the public road and continued their journey. No more shots fired from the vehicle. It was over. It was done with. The security officer was not injured. He was not shot. Nobody else was hurt. There was some broken glass in a couple of vehicle cars, but that was it. The incident was over. The shooting was done with. The security officer made the conscious decision to continue the chase, continue the pursuit, continue the use of force until eventually someone was dead. And there he was, just trying to protect himself, just trying to protect those that he was hired to protect, just trying to defend himself against imminent danger. But once those shots dissipated, once those shots stopped, once no more gunfire, the imminent danger aspect of defense is over with. Secure yourself with your weapon. Make sure you call 911. Get to a safe location, whether that be inside a car, whether that be inside a building, whether that be behind some cars, under a car, wherever it might be. Secure yourself and protect yourself there until law enforcement can arrive to assist you. But when you chase a vehicle, when you chase a person off the property, out of your safety zone, out of your safety realm, area, out of the control of your property, of your authority, and you chase the person, you escalate the problem, and then you use deadly force, there's no argument. There's no defense. You can't just stand there and go, well, you know, I was standing my ground. I was defending myself. I was protecting others. You can't argue that aspect of the law because from the legal side, imminent danger was over. You no longer was in fear of your life. Oh, you might have been shook up. You might have been a little afraid. You might have even peed your pants. You've just been shot at. You could have lost your life. You could have been injured, but you weren't. So when that person, when that vehicle is fleeing the opposite direction, leaving the property, and you go storming after it, pursuing it, and still shooting at a vehicle that's no longer shooting at you, you cross the line from defense to murder, from being the victim to being the perpetrator, from being the person hired to protect to the person who is the aggressor and the defendant in the case. From a legal standpoint, there's no argument. There's no defense. You can't say, well, I thought they were still shooting. I thought, even if they were still shooting, even if in this case the vehicle had left the premises, was heading away from you, and they were still shooting out of the vehicle, does it really make any sense for anyone to storm after that vehicle while shots are being fired at you? One person against a carload of who knows how many, who knows what kind of weapons they have, who knows what they're up to. They obviously are out to shoot you, and they've left the property, and they're heading down the road, and even if shots are being fired, you're storming after them, you're pursuing them, shooting back. No, there's no defense. There's no argument. You can't claim imminent defense. I'm in imminent danger. No, you can't claim that. Once they left the property, you could have secured yourself in a safe area. You could have protected yourself from that area until law enforcement arrived. Once you continued the pursuit, even in the event that they were shooting back at you, but they left the property, you can't possibly think stand your ground or imminent danger would apply to you, because it doesn't. From the legal standpoint, danger was over. Even if they were still shooting at you and they were driving away on public road, danger is over. Secure yourself where you're at on the property you're hired to protect. Call 911. Don't engage. Don't escalate when the threat is leaving or when the threat is over. In a situation like this one here, again, as with the other two situations, no one at the point where the vehicle exited the property and began leaving, no one had been injured. No one had been killed. No other lives were in danger at that time. You, the security officer, had done your job. You protected the public. You protected those you were hired to protect. And most of all, you protected yourself. You returned fire. You shot at them. They shot at you. You got into a secured area. You protected yourself. Nobody's injured. Nobody's killed. Everything's over. They're gone. Police will be there shortly. and maybe they'll be caught, and maybe they won't. But the bottom line is, you're safe. You're alive. It's over. But when you continue escalating, when you continue regenerating that threat, that danger, you can no longer argue imminent danger. You can no longer argue, I'm just doing my job. I'm just defending myself. Defending yourself over, of what? What are you defending yourself of? They're gone. They're on the way out. They're heading down the road. You're the one putting yourself back in that dangerous situation by chasing them. I don't know if it's just the adrenaline. I don't know if it's the physical aspect, or maybe it's just the way that we have been raised, you know, as men, as people in a country that has always defended ourselves against dangerous situations and people who would do harm to us. Maybe it's that. Maybe it's just who we are. But you cannot use deadly force or any level of force, period, when the danger is over, or when the subject is in compliance, or when you have them in custody. But in these three scenarios, from the legal standpoint, there was no reasonable defense for the use of deadly force. Because in all three situations, all three people, a civilian, two security officers, had the opportunity to secure themselves safely until law enforcement arrived to assist them. But they chose to escalate the situation. From the legal side, know what you can and cannot do. Understand what threat assessment is. Understand what the word imminent, that means immediately, that means now. Understand what that really truly means. Most of all, stay safe out there. Train, train, train. Learn, learn, learn. And that's this week's From the Legal Side. We'll see you here tomorrow night on the Private Officer Beat here on the all-new Public Safety Radio.